following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, hello. And welcome to a Thursday. Oh, it's only Thursday. Thursday is the worst day of the week. You know why? Because you've made it this far and you still have another day to go before the weekend hits. We'll survive somehow for one more day. I'm not committing to surviving for the next 2.5 years with this orange moron in chief in charge. You never know from one day to another what's going to happen. So Dump just wrapped up a what passes for a press conference in the Trump era, a 2-and-2, when he's got another world leader visiting, as today, Shinzo Abe from Japan. They have their little meeting, and then they set up microphones, and they each give a little short prepared statement, and they each take two questions. That there's your 2-and-2. Of course, today, Trump calls on someone from Fox and someone from the Daily Caller. Yeah, no leanings there. There was really no news made during this thing. The president said he would certainly like to see normalization of relations with North Korea and would invite Kim Jong-un to visit the U.S. if next week's summit in Singapore goes well. Great. He said at the same time, if it doesn't, he's prepared to walk away. He did it before, he said, citing his prior cancellation of the summit. I'm totally prepared to walk. Yeah, his letter that he wrote canceling it, and then he went back on his canceling it. I'm like, oh, they still want to do it? Okay, I'm in. Yeah. The man just doesn't have a clue. Doesn't have a clue. And it's frightening. I'm looking to see if there's anything else on this so-called press conference. Daniel Dale of the Toronto Star tweeted, Trump never holds solo press conferences, almost never does interviews with anyone outside Fox so-called news, and usually calls on the most friendly outlets at the joint press conferences he does with foreign leaders. No outside impromptu scrums, no opportunity for tough questioning. It has been over a year since he held a press conference, and well over a year since his last sit-down interview with a serious journalist, and that was with Lester Holt. And we saw where that got us. Jackson is barking. If you hear Jackson, that's not him saying hello. It's him freaking out because it's raining and thundering outside. Yes, this is South Florida. It is now officially hurricane season, which began a week ago. And not a fun time of the year to be in South Florida. Hopefully things go well this year. Okay. Well, there's so much. We've got Howie Klein coming up today. It is Thursday, after all. And we have a big primary to go over. But the most intriguing thing Howie said to me was, and I'm going to quote him on this, there was a special election, too, in Missouri. And that tells us more about November than the primaries do. So we'll talk with Howie about all that. But there is a lot of news to cover. So why don't we get to it in a loose edition of What's News.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, does the ZTE story confuse you? Because it's confusing to me. But they're back in the news again. The Trump administration says they've agreed to relax its punishment of that Chinese telecom company. Here's the story from Reuters News.
Chinese tech giant ZTE may soon be back in business after signing an initial deal to lift a crippling US sales ban. That's according to Reuters sources who are familiar with the agreement. ZTE's ban became a central sticking point in high-level talks on the trade dispute between Washington and Beijing. If the deal is finalized, it may set China's number two device maker back on its feet after the US Commerce Department hit the company with a seven-year ban in April. It barred ZTE from buying US-made software and hardware components after the company was caught illegally shipping products to Iran and North Korea. A Commerce Department spokesperson said Tuesday that, quote, no definitive agreement has been signed, and ZTE did not respond to requests for comment. The deal would let the company off with a $1 billion fine, as well as $400 million held in escrow to cover against any future violations by ZTE. Sources told Reuters that ZTE signed the initial deal over the weekend. Beijing made it clear during the course of trade talks that ZTE's survival was one of its big concerns. Last month, US President Donald Trump tweeted that he told commerce officials to figure out a way for the company to resume operations.
We caught them doing bad things, and we essentially made it so difficult that it was shut down. By shutting them down, we're hurting a lot of American companies, really good American companies.
This week's deal apparently requires ZTE to replace its board and executive team in 30 days. However, Trump's recent turn on ZTE has met resistance in Washington. On Tuesday, U.S. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer accused the president of letting ZTE off the hook, saying, quote, the president who roared like a lion is governing like a lamb when it comes to China.
The Commerce Department action came after Trump tweeted earlier this month that he planned to help ZTE because too many jobs in China would otherwise be lost. But just this morning, there's action. Chuck Schumer announced on the Senate floor that Tom Cotton and Chris Van Hollen have a bill that would reverse the administration's decision to lift penalties on ZTE. And apparently, not only Schumer, but Marco Rubio, Richard Blumenthal, Susan Collins, and Bill Nelson have all joined in on this amendment to spike the ZTE deal. Stay tuned. With a planned North Korea summit less than a week away, Donald Trump is complaining about his presidential duties. He's supposed to head to Canada on Friday for the G7 meetings, the summit of world leaders. Trump reportedly said to advisors that he thinks attending may not be a good use of his time because he's diametrically opposed on many issues with his counterparts and he doesn't want to be lectured by them. The Washington Post reporting that the president has griped about German Chancellor Angela Merkel, largely because they disagree on many issues, and have an uneasy rapport, I guess because she's not a 10 in his eyes, as well as British Prime Minister Theresa May, whom he sees as too politically correct. And see the comment I made about Angela Merkel. And he just doesn't like women who aren't, you know, Playboy bunnies. Okay, here's another one for you. Can you guess which one of Trump's cabinet members is in hot water again? I'll give you a second. If you said EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, well, you'd be correct. This time, Pruitt is defending an attempt he made last year to secure a business opportunity for his wife with fast food chain Chick-fil-A when he ordered an aide, yes, one of his aides at the EPA, to set up a call with the chain's chairman to discuss the possibility of becoming a franchisee. Now, if that's not weird enough, here's where it gets really weird. NextStar TV reporter Jessica Smith caught up with Scott Pruitt and asked him about the potential ethical violation. You got to listen to this answer.
I think with great change comes, you know, I think opposition. I mean, there's significant change that's happening across not only at the EPA, but across this administration, and it's needed. Look, my wife is an entrepreneur herself. Chick-fil-A is a franchise of faith, and it's one of the best in the country. And so that's something we were very excited about. So And we need more of them in Tulsa, and we need more of them across the country. So anyway, it's an exciting time.
Oh, my God. And as Robert Hill, New York City, just pointed out in the chat room, in addition to Chick-fil-A, it's also been reported that he had staffers drive him all over town looking for special lotion, I think that they only sell in Ritz-Carlton's, and a used mattress from the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. All weird personal errands that are not their jobs. So although Pruitt is currently the subject of, count them, 13 investigations, he still somehow seems to be a favorite of the president's. Trump on Wednesday was at FEMA headquarters for a 2018 hurricane briefing with the vice president and several cabinet members. Got to wonder why those cabinet members were there, but whatever. As he tends to do, he went around the table. This time he was praising the posse instead of having them all heap praise on him. Of course, the praise included his wife, Melania, who for some reason joined him there, staying silent, but it was her first public appearance in almost a month.
Secretary Nielsen, Administrator Long, I want to thank you for hosting this incredible group of people. I'd like to sort of maybe say and pay some respects to some of the people here today. I have a list, because we have to start with our great First Lady, Melania. Thank you, Melania. She's really great. She went through a little rough patch, but she's doing great, and we're very proud of her. She's done a fantastic job as First Lady. The people love you. The people of our country love you. So thank you.
I don't,
Vice
but the
President
people do.
Pence, Mike, good. Mike, another great job you are doing.
Trump had great praise for Pruitt, as CNN's Jake Tapper explains.
An official tells CNN that two of EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt's aides have now resigned. This news comes on the day that we learned Pruitt allegedly used his capacity as a cabinet-level official of the U.S. government to get his wife a Chick-fil-A fast food franchise. This brings the grand total now to 13 investigations into Pruitt's various ethics issues. Still, today, the president had nothing but glowing things to say about him.
EPA is doing really, really well. And, you know, somebody has to say that about you a little bit. You know that, Scott.
Oi.
The president went around the table today at FEMA praising members of his cabinet individually, including Scott Pruitt, with vociferous and kind adjectives. Of course, there was one cabinet official who only got the bare minimum.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Uh-oh.
Of course, President Trump last week said he wished he'd hired someone else instead of Jeff Sessions for the job of Attorney General.
Yeah, and really scary news out today that says Judge Jeanine Pirro, I got to work on her delivery because she's like this. She talks like this, and she wants to be Attorney General. Can you believe it? Judge Jeanine Pirro wants to be Attorney General? Ugh. And Trump likes putting his TV people in government because he thinks it's all a reality TV show. Well, Rudy Giuliani wasn't at the FEMA thing. That's because he's over in Israel for a paid speaking gig. So, but while he's there, he's still talking and stoking controversy, perhaps trying to take some of the media heat from his boss. I don't know. This time, he thought it was somehow appropriate to comment on and pass judgment on Stormy Daniels?
She believes in her husband. She knows it's untrue. I don't even think there's a slight suspicion that it's true when you look at Stormy Daniels. I know Donald Trump. And look at his three wives, right? Beautiful women, classy women, women of great substance. Stormy Daniels?
How dare you, you fucking piece of shit. Sorry, I just had to cut. Stormy Daniels, like you're one to judge, like you're a great prize. This is a guy who was mayor of New York. He had his wife living with him in Gracie Mansion. That's where the mayor of New York lives. And he had his mistress girlfriend set up somewhere else. Well, he had a press conference at Gracie Mansion basically to announce to his wife that they're getting a divorce and that he's moving her out of Gracie Mansion and moving his girlfriend in. By the way, that girlfriend, I think he finally just dumped, too. What a piece of shit. He's talking about Trump's three wives? Yeah, that's family values for you. Sorry, let me compose myself and get back to it.
So, I think she
we have
that.
To respect on this stage every woman.
thank you. To the Israeli woman there who said, we have to respect on this stage every woman, and wait till you hear how Giuliani comes back, you sanctimonious piece of shit.
Yes, I respect porn stars.
Ugh.
Don't you respect porn stars? Or do you think that porn stars desecrate women?
Oh, fuck
you. Do you think that porn stars don't respect women and therefore sell their bodies? So, yes, I respect all human beings. I even have to respect, you know, criminals. But I'm sorry, I don't respect a porn star.
I even have to respect criminals, but I don't respect a porn star. Who the hell are you to judge? What a vile excuse for a human being who claims he's better than anyone else. Stormy Daniels is doing what she needs to do to earn a living. And apparently she's pretty good at it because she's done well for herself and looks good enough that Donald Trump wanted to fuck her in a hotel room at a golf tournament. You know, they talk about affair. It wasn't an affair. It was one shtup. And that I guess he was willing to pay $130,000 for. And Rudy Giuliani just wants to lie and smear this woman for it? Oh, it gets better.
The way I respect a career woman or a woman of substance or a woman who has great respect for herself as a woman and as a person and isn't going to sell her body for sexual exploitation. So, Stormy, you want to bring a case? Let me cross-examine you.
Oh, because, she'd love it.
The business you were in entitles you to no degree of giving your credibility any weight. And
what?
Secondly, explain to me how she could be damaged.
Oh.
I mean, she has no reputation.
Really?
If you're going to sell your body for money, you just don't have a reputation. Maybe old-fashioned, I don't know.
Says the male whore. Unbelievable. There are no words. I'm for once speechless and dumbfounded. Rudy Giuliani, who should be fired, by the way. Oh, it gets worse. While we're on the subject of Giuliani, let me just do this. So the guy who is allegedly Donald Trump's personal attorney decided that he's an expert on foreign policy, and he decides to sound off on what's happening with North Korea and Palestine.
Well, Kim Jong-un got back on his hands and knees and begged for it, which is exactly the position you want to put him in.
What?
Said, well, if you get tough on China on trade, China's not going to help you with North Korea. Well, somehow, North Korea, after he canceled the summit because they insulted the vice president, they insulted his national security advisor, and they also said they were going to go to nuclear war against us. They were going to defeat us in a nuclear war. He said, well, we're not going to have a summit under those circumstances. Well, Kim Jong-un got back on his hands and knees and begged for it, which is exactly the position you want to put him in. That's what has to happen with the Palestinian Authority. They have to be seeking peace. You got to change the dynamic and put the pressure on them.
Talking about having a world leader on his hands and knees, and that's exactly the position we want him in. Rudy Giuliani, you are not in the administration. You are not tasked with speaking for this nation on any front. You are the president's personal attorney. Shut your fucking mouth. God, someone needs to slap him one. Okay, there's more. You ready for more? Because it gets creepier and creepier. Reports say that Donald Trump is consumed with his pardoning power. He's already pardoned or commuted the sentences of six people, but that may just be the start of a larger trend, as the White House has reportedly assembled the paperwork to pardon dozens more, this according to two sources telling CNN. Just yesterday, Trump commuted the sentence of 63-year-old Alice Johnson, someone brought to his attention by reality TV curiosity Kim Kardashian, who happens to be the wife of Trump's latest biggest supporter, Kanye West.
President Trump commuted the prison sentence of Alice Marie Johnson. She has been serving a life sentence in prison on charges of attempted cocaine possession, conspiracy, and money laundering. This comes a week after the president met last week with Kim Kardashian West, who brought a little bit of celebrity appeal to this case that had been gaining some popularity online with calls for an act of clemency on the president's part. And it appears that her appeal was successful. Kim Kardashian coordinated this effort with Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and senior advisor, who helped coordinate this Oval Office meeting just last week. And of course, John, this comes as the president has been increasingly turning to his power to pardon or to commute the prison sentences of people. He's issued several pardons recently, but this is one of the first that has been really somebody who is currently serving in prison, a commutation, and also somebody who really doesn't fit the profile of a political ally of his. The only closest thing that we can think of is Jack Johnson, the famed boxer, who his case was brought to the president's attention by another celebrity, Sylvester Stallone, but that was a posthumous pardoning on the president's part. This is somebody whose life is actually going to be affected by this.
You see, because Trump is a star fucker. Now, in terms of Alice Johnson, a life sentence for a first-time nonviolent drug offender is extreme. So this clemency was probably warranted, although the Obama administration turned her down twice. It never made it as far as Obama's desk because, and when it went through the process, she was flagged early on because of the, I guess, the severity of her crime. I don't know the specifics. I just do know that a lot of people, a disproportionate amount of people of color, are serving, you know, long, ridiculous life sentences for first-time nonviolent drug offenses. So those should be looked at. But the fact that Trump would never have known about this woman if not for the celebrity who brought it to his attention is not only frightening, it's disgusting. The same goes for the way he decided on the others he opted to pardon. Now, critics have raised the question of whether Trump is sending a signal to his former allies and aides who are facing criminal charges in special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation with his robust use of his pardoning power. Congressman Ted Lieu, who's never short on words, weighed in on Trump's pardoning party.
The pardon process is supposed to be based on justice and to vindicate the societal values of forgiveness and mercy. Unfortunately, the president has perverted the pardon process, and now it seems like he's pardoning people based on their celebrity status or because a celebrity talked to him. In this case, it's pretty clear that the only reason Trump pardoned Ms. Johnson is because Kim Kardashian talked to Donald Trump about this case. That shouldn't be how it works. It shouldn't be based on which celebrities have access to the president or the wealthy or who has connections. It should be based on a process, and I urge the president to go back to the same process all previous presidents have used.
Well, some presidents in the past have averted that process of going through the Office of Pardons and Clemency over at the Justice Department, but this president clearly has done so in these first initial pardons. We've also learned, by the way, that he's assembled already the paperwork over at the White House, the legal counsel's office there to pardon dozens of other people. Some of the pardons would be instances where he thinks the Department of Justice, the U.S. attorneys, and you're a former federal prosecutor, overstepped. Would you support these pardons moving forward?
It would depend on what those cases are and the individual facts of each case. But we know from many of the pardons he's already given, they are based on crimes over which he and his associates are being investigated, such as perjury, obstruction of justice, and making false statements.
Yep.
That troubles me greatly, and I hope the president doesn't send a message that he thinks these crimes are somehow okay.
I think he is sending a message. It's just more of the normalization of the not normal in the Trump era. It was just a week ago that late-night comedian Samantha Bee shocked the nation by calling Ivanka Trump a really bad word. Now, the thing to remember, though, is the context in which she used the word. The story of our nation literally tearing babies from their mother's arms was overshadowed by the C word. It's a word that I don't use. I find it vulgar, and I have no trouble using, you know, expletives, as you can tell by this show. The C word is just one that I don't know. For some reason, I draw a line at. And my husband makes a point that Samantha Bee really screwed up by using that word because it gave the Trumpists something to some ammunition to fight back on. It was a in sports lingo, and I'm so not the sports person, an unforced error.
right? It was unnecessary. But I want to take you back to the original context that Samantha Bee said that word in, because she was making a bigger point about a story that is not covered enough, that we should all be outraged over, and that should have gotten the attention, frankly, that the fact that she uttered the C word got. Now, just know this is the unexpurgated version. This is before the censors got to it. So you'll hear exactly what she said.
Don't worry. The Trump administration has a really good explanation for why they're treating migrants like animals. It was all Obama's idea.
President Trump is blaming Democrats for his administration's controversial new policy.
It happened under the Obama administration. Separating illegal immigrant children from their families is not new under President Trump.
Well, neither is my alcoholism, but it's getting a lot worse under Trump. Okay, fine. They're half right. We have had awful immigration practices since, well, always. Even under presidents we like seeing shirtless. A recent report from the ACLU describes hundreds of abuses of migrant children while in custody of the U.S. government during the Obama administration. So, no, Donald Trump didn't invent this issue. He's just making it so much worse. Now everyone who even approaches the border is treated like a criminal.
This is unprecedented. This is the worst thing I've seen in 25 plus years of doing the civil rights work. I mean, I am talking to these mothers and they're describing their kids screaming, "Mommy, mommy, don't let them take me away." 5 years old, 6 years old, and they're just being ripped away. The medical evidence is overwhelming that we may be doing permanent trauma to these kids.
I believe that study was published in the medical journal. Yeah, no shit. Of course, forcibly separating kids from their parents is traumatic. As John Kelly explained on NPR, that's the whole point.
A big name of the game is deterrence.
Even though people say that's cruel and heartless to take a mother away from her children.
Yeah, I think cruel and heartless, I wouldn't put it quite that way. The children will be taken care of.
Yeah.
They'll put into foster care or whatever. But the big point is,
unbelievable,
they elected to come illegally into the United States.
Foster care or whatever. Jesus Christ, if John Kelly had directed Sophie's Choice, it would have been called "Ungrateful Bitch Got to Keep One Whole Kid." Despite what John Kelly thinks, cruelty won't stop immigration. It will just make immigrants' lives harder and strain our already overwhelmed system. The Office of Refugee Resettlement, which deals with any child who arrived in the country unaccompanied by an adult, already has a terrible track record of keeping an eye on kids. In 2017, the ORR lost nearly 1,500 children. 1,500! These people seem really bad at keeping track of unaccompanied minors. How about we don't make a ton more minors unaccompanied, and we don't treat any kids like criminals, no matter what Homeland Security Secretary and balayage victim Kirstjen Nielsen says.
What do you say to people who worry about the impact of separating parents and children and that sort of thing?
Don't break the law. I mean, that's why they're separated, because they're breaking the law.
Look, Kirstjen, I'm sorry your parents took a normal name, jumbled up the letters, and threw in a J like you're the Norse god of being white when you know your ass is from Clearwater, Florida. But that's no excuse to treat us like we're dumb. We know this isn't just about breaking the law, because you're also doing this to families who are legally seeking asylum.
Woman fleeing the Congo. She right. comes to the United States, not sneaking in. She's showing up at a port of entry to say, "I am here seeking asylum in America." And the U.S. government does what?
Oh, let me guess. The usual? They took her daughter away? Oh, yeah, that's right. Two people following the process to the letter were forcibly separated and spent their first 4 months in this country detained in different time zones. So now, after decades of ignoring the issue, Americans are finally paying attention. Well, most of us. Ivanka Trump, who works at the White House, chose to post the second most oblivious tweet we've seen this week. You know, Ivanka, that's a beautiful photo of you and your child, but let me just say, one mother to another, do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless cunt. He listens to you. Put on something tight and low cut and tell your father to fucking stop it. Tell him it was an Obama thing and see how it goes, okay?
So again, the vulgarity overshadowed the bigger story, which is what should be covered. And for those people who are so offended, especially those Republicans, those Trump supporters, Trump himself, who said Samantha Bee should be fired, the president of the United States telling a private company to fire somebody. We've seen too much of that lately. Because what? His sensibilities are offended by some dirty words?
Our country's going to hell. It's going to hell. What the hell are we doing? Knock the hell out of them. My tax proposal cuts the hell out of taxes. I don't give a damn. He gets the nomination, they're going to sue his ass off. We'll beat the shit out of them. Let them beat the shit out of ISIS also. They're ripping the shit out of the sea. We're going to knock the shit out of ISIS. Going to knock the shit out of it. Whoever the hell brought this mic system, don't pay the son of a bitch to put it in, I'll tell you. You shouldn't pay the bastard. But it's political bullshit. She said he's a pussy. And you can tell them to go themselves.
You're not going to raise that fucking price, you understand?
Listen, you motherfuckers, we'll tax you 25%.
What kind of people do we have? I moved in her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there, and she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony tits and everything. She's totally changed her look. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
So those who are so offended by Samantha Bee's use of one word, have it that. What?
You're practicing whataboutism. You're saying, what about what he said? It doesn't address the fact that, number one, what she said was unnecessary.
I said it was unnecessary.
And wrong, and gave that moral high ground to them.
I agree.
In a gifted package with a nice big ribbon on it.
I agree, and she apologized and said it was unnecessary, and I said it was unnecessary. Did I not play her apology? Oh, shit. Where's her apology? And I'm late for Howie. Oh, my God.
It was a half-assed apology.
It wasn't a half-assed. Here's Sam B's apology.
People were offended and angry that I used an epithet to describe the president's daughter and advisor last week. It is a word I have used on the show many times, hoping to reclaim it. This time, I used it as an insult. I crossed the line. I regret it. And I do apologize for that. Mm-hmm. The problem is that many women have heard that word at the worst moments of their lives. A lot of them don't want that word reclaimed. They want it gone. And I don't blame them. I don't want to inflict more pain on them. I want this show to be challenging and I want it to be honest, but I never intended it to hurt anyone except Ted Cruz. Many men were also offended by my use of the word. I do not care about that. I hate that this distracted from more important issues. I hate that I did something to contribute to the nightmare of 24-hour news cycles that we're all white-knuckling through. I should have known that a potty-mouthed insult would be inherently more interesting to them than juvenile immigration policy.
Yep.
I would do anything to help those kids. I hate that this distracted from them, so to them, I am also sorry. And look, if you are worried about the death of civility, don't sweat it. I'm a comedian. People who hone their voices in basement bars while yelling back at drunk hecklers are definitely not paragons of civility. I am. I'm really sorry that I said that word, but you know what? Civility is just nice words. Maybe we should all worry a little bit more about the niceness of our actions.
I thought that was a great apology. And she understands the word, which was unnecessary, drowned out the bigger message, the more important message. And the point I was making by playing Donald Trump's vulgarities is the bullshit hypocrisy from the right, because they claim to be so offended by a simple word. Well, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Isn't that how the old saying goes? But then again, Obama won't remember that because he doesn't know the words to God Bless America either. All right. A very quick timeout because we're late and we'll get Howie Klein on the line next.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, it is Thursday. That means we get together with Howie Klein to talk politics, election results, and a whole lot more. Hey, Howie.
Hello, Nicole.
I made a mistake. I was wrapping up a bit on Donald Trump, on Samantha Bee, using the C word, which took away from the message she was trying to make. And I was trying to make a stupid joke, and I said that Obama won't remember because he can't remember the words to God Bless America. And I meant to say Trump. Nothing like stepping on your own punchline.
Oh, God.
So there's that. I'm a little sleep deprived these days. How are you doing?
A little sleep deprived as well. And I go to sleep at 9 o'clock every evening.
Wow.
Yeah, I shouldn't say I go to sleep. I go to bed at 9 and then I watch something on TV. Right now I'm watching a series called Billions, which I'm enjoying very much.
Oh, are you? I've seen it, but I've not watched that one. Maybe we'll have to check it out over the summer because the pickings are slim.
Yeah, well, it was, there are three seasons that are available on demand.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine suggested it was pretty good, and he was right. It's pretty good.
Cool. So I hope it was better than we had the big Super Tuesday primary on Tuesday, but there was not a whole lot of suspense, was there?
Did you say suspense?
Yes.
Oh, no, there is. I mean, for political junkies, there is. In fact, some of the people don't realize this, but some of the counts aren't done yet. And,
right.
And in some cases, there are people who are, still have bated breath waiting to see who the winner is. There are people who are ahead, but at least in a few of the districts, there is no winner has been declared yet.
Is that
I shouldn't say that. So the way the California primary works, it's not about a winner, it's about two winners.
Mm-hmm.
So in every case, there is a top person, but who will be in the general election is the second person as well, and there are several districts where that hasn't been decided yet.
How did California do this? Did it seem like a good idea at the time?
I never thought it was a good idea. I thought it was a terrible idea. Sort of the Democratic Party thing was a terrible idea. But it was, the Republicans got it done. Now, ironically, they've suffered a lot from it because they generally speaking, don't get into statewide races. And so it's usually two Democrats. For example, in the U.S. Senate, there will be no Republican running in November. It'll just be a very, very conservative Democrat who the Republicans are very happy with. I mean, Dianne Feinstein has been getting Republican votes for her whole career.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans like her.
Mm-hmm.
And why shouldn't they? She's extremely conservative for a Democrat. And then the other participant in the general election will be Kevin DeLeon, who is very, very progressive. And he won't be getting Republican votes, I don't think. Here you're going to have every conservative and moderate Democrat voting for Dianne Feinstein, and any Republicans who want to participate, they'll vote for her as well. So it doesn't give Kevin much of a chance, unfortunately, because he's a great candidate and he would make a great U.S. senator. And Pelosi has already proven that she's a pretty awful U.S. senator.
You mean Feinstein?
So my point, though, was that the Republicans by pushing this thing, which passed as a proposition, so the voters voted for it, by the Republicans pushing it, they've screwed themselves in a lot of races. So, you know, some of them they don't care about. So if you take like a deep blue district, they know they have no shot in those districts anyway, so they don't really care. But on the other hand, you can take there are a lot of races where Democrats wind up not having a shot. For this year, there don't seem to be any where it happened. There's one where it may happen. Like I said, the votes aren't counted yet. There are almost 100,000 votes in some of these districts still to be counted. So that's why there's no final decisions. If you want me to give you an example, I'll be happy to. And that's in the high desert. You do want me to give you an example,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. So in the high desert, in a very, very large, I think it's the largest physical district in the state. So it's right along the Nevada border. And it's it goes all the way down to San Bernardino suburbs.
Wow.
So it's huge, huge district, but not a lot of people. I mean, no, I shouldn't say that. Not a lot of people per square mile. All the districts have about the same number of people. You know, let's say 711,000. But this one is very, very spread out. In any case, the incumbent is kind of a mainstream conservative named Paul Cook, and a crackpot Republican decided to run against him. I believe his name is Tim Donnelly. So Donnelly was in the legislature for a long time, and he was always the most conservative sort of bomb thrower in the legislature. Completely crazy. I mean, like beyond a lunatic. So a very, very much a Tea Partier, a Trump candidate, just a nut in general. And then there is a fantastic progressive woman running in there as well, who is, you know, someone who Blue America endorsed as well. Her name is Marge. And, you know, just a great candidate. Now, of course, I just said her name is Marge, and probably someone who's paying close attention realizes that that's because I didn't remember her second name, but it's Doyle. Her name is Marge Doyle.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she's really, really, really wonderful. She's a nurse. She is a member of the LGBT community. And as it turns out, she and Donnelly are tied. I mean, he's a little bit ahead of her, but when you think of 100,000 more votes to be counted, it's the same thing. It's too close to call.
Wow.
Now, one of the reasons why this is so important, and I hate to be gruesome about this, is that the incumbent, Paul Cook, is pretty ill. And he may decide, or the Lord may decide, that he's not going to be going all the way through this thing. I hope that isn't what happens. I mean, he's not a terrible person or something. Mm-hmm. But there's a possibility that seat is going to be an open seat. So then, you know, Tim, we certainly don't want Tim Donnelly in that seat. I mean, he would be one of the worst members of Congress, which is saying a lot, because there are so many really bad members, and he's beyond horrible. And Marge would make a really good member of Congress. Mm-hmm. She's quite an interesting woman who's going to come to the job from a very, very different perspective. You know, it's a very rural district, although there's some suburbs around San Bernardino, but it's mostly a very rural district. And that's where her expertise is. That's what she's been doing. You know, things like, you know, trying to get rural hospitals that, you know, they have different needs. And she's had a lot of experience, a very, very grassroots experience. And the idea of her becoming a member of Congress would be very exciting. In any case, there are several districts like that in terms of different possibilities. There's one of the Orange County districts. The top two keep flipping back and forth as more voters get votes get counted. Hmm. So there is a, you know, there that's Dana Rohrabacher's district.
Oh boy.
It's 48. And so Dana Rohrabacher got the most votes in the primary. And then the two candidates that were recruited by the DCCC, you know, they made a mistake by recruiting two candidates there, and then eventually they decided that, I call them frickin' frack, but it's actually Hans and Harley.
Right.
So eventually the DCCC decided they like Harley better, so they endorsed him. At that time when they did that, Harley was way ahead. But the people got so angry, the voters got so angry that the DCCC stuck their nose in and tried to trying to tell them who to vote for, that suddenly there was a burst of energy for Hans. So Harley, if the DCCC hadn't interfered, Harley would have won.
Wow.
He may win anyway.
Wow.
The last time I looked, he was slightly ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But Harley, you know, Harley was slightly ahead the last time I looked. But Hans was ahead, you know, every few hours, Hans gets ahead. And then Harley gets ahead, and then Hans gets ahead. I mean, it's quite amazing. But like I was saying, if the DCCC hadn't interfered, Harley would have won. And it was just that their interference, first of all, really sparked a lot of anger from the voters, but also from Hans. It made him really dig down. I have a feeling he dug down into his pockets as well and probably spent some more money. All these people are in Orange County are a bunch of self-funders. In fact, Harley spent, I think the last time I saw, it's not updated, but the last time I saw, he spent $1.3 million out of his own bank account.
Wow.
And that isn't even the most. I mean, another one who won in Orange County, Gil Cisneros, the biggest joke who the DCCC is running, he spent over $3 million.
Unbelievable.
From his own pocket.
Wow.
You know, if someone raises a lot of money and winds up spending that much money, that's one thing. But this guy won the lottery and could just spend whatever he wants to spend, which is what he was doing. There are a lot of people who did that type of thing this year, and most of them lost. Some of them lost really, really badly. I mean, there was this one woman in Texas, a terrible candidate, and she spent $6.5 million. It was definitely over $6 million, and she lost the primary. And so I said, like I said, most of the heavy-duty self-funders have lost. Generally speaking, in the Republicans accept them more than the Democrats do. So anyway, I have become sensitized to the fact that this time for us goes by very, very quickly.
Yes.
So there is something I wanted to get out there.
Okay. It's
important.
Great.
And that was that when everyone was watching all these primaries on Tuesday night, you know, especially in California and in New Jersey, but they were scattered all over the country. When everyone was watching those, there was a very important special election in Missouri. So in the suburbs of Kansas City. So it's a district that Romney won. It's a district that Trump won. I believe that the last state senator who won it, the Republican who went to another job, he won by something like 25 points. I mean, it's not prohibitively red. You know, Trump won by 4 points, Romney won by 4 points, but it's a red district.
Right.
Normally, Democrats don't win there. So what happens is a Democratic woman, and this is important, campaigning not as a blue dog in a Republican light, but campaigning as a normal Democrat. She's pro-choice. She is in favor of sensible gun control. She was against the Republican tax bill, which was silly. She, in other words, what I'm saying is she wasn't trying to get Republican votes. She was trying to turn out the Democratic base, and that's exactly what happened, and she won.
Wow.
And she won by quite a margin as well. It wasn't like, you know, like these races that I'm telling you about that are so close. So the reason that I'm saying that's important is because that is something that tells you what's going to happen in November. The primaries don't really do that. You know, they can give you a hint about excitement and the number of Republicans as opposed to the number of Democrats who turn out. So that's, you know, that's important. But the special elections, those are regular elections, and they are predictive, I should say, they're predictive of what's going to happen in November, where the primaries, you can read into them and, you know, figure out, oh, he's a little more conservative, he's a little more liberal, or, you know, you can make assumptions, but then it's not the same thing. My theory, and I'm not the only one who thinks it, but so other people have different theories. My theory is that the winner, the biggest single, by far, the biggest single reason that people are going to vote or not vote in November is going to be all about Trump. Mm-hmm. And I was just borne out this morning by a very, very believable poll that came out by that it's done every month by NBC News and the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
And again, they're asking people, they're trying to get down into people's minds and find out what is going to make them vote. You know, and you know, the top line was that people, especially Democrats, that people go Democrats by, you know, a big margin are going to vote based on health care. They're going to try to find out which candidates agree with them on health care. I believe it was 32%. So even more than the economy, more than any other issue, is going to be health care. Overall, it was 22%, but among Democrats, 32%. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something else in the poll, if you dug down enough, that was really, really crucial. And that is that a majority of people, just they're not going to get into this kind of nitty-gritty of policy that they can't understand and it takes a lot of attention span. They were going right for something that is pretty simple. They're asking themselves, which candidate is going to hold Trump accountable? So not necessarily impeach him.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to know who's going to put a check on Trump and who's not. And most people were going to vote for the candidate that put a check on, that's going to put a check on Trump. And I believe that. I really believe that's going to be the single biggest issue. I believe that all along, and that all the other things, you know, about guns and about reasonable, you know, economic issues and mm-hmm. tax issues, all that stuff is important. But in the end, most of the people who go out and vote in November are going to say to themselves before they pull the lever, is this candidate going to put a check on Trump, or are they going to keep enabling Trump like they've done already? And that's why the Republicans, no matter what they do, no matter, you know, if they want to talk about their tax bill, their tax legislation, if they want to talk about how great the economy is, whatever they say, in the end isn't going to really matter, because the voters want to know who is going to calm down Trump or put a check on Trump or not let Trump start a war or not let Trump keep doing all the crazy things that are driving people insane.
Right. Well, the only way to do that is to flip both the House and Senate. So to take the Congress away from him so he doesn't have the tool to push through all these crazy policies he's trying to do.
Absolutely. And fortunately, that's what the voters think as well.
Good. So we're there. But we still are in primary season when we can hope for the most progressive candidates out there. Were there any great progressives who won, who maybe surprised you?
Absolutely, there were. So one of the ones that I was the most excited about was here in Orange County, mm-hmm. California, where Katie Porter won mm-hmm. against Dave Minn. So who are these people? So of course, Blue America had endorsed Katie Porter, but you know, people aren't voting because of who Blue America endorsed. In this case, they voted because they trust Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
Surveys that came out after the voting show that people were excited about the fact that Elizabeth Warren. Not only did Elizabeth Warren endorse her, and quite loudly and quite frequently,
mm-hmm.
but Elizabeth Warren endorsed her and no one else. I don't mean no one else in California. I mean no one else in the country.
Wow.
Elizabeth Warren is endorsing people in the Senate, which is what she is, but she's in the Senate, so she's endorsing other senators. But in this case, this was the only member of the House, the only candidate for the House that she endorsed. So why? And that's the reason is because She studied at Harvard under Elizabeth Warren. So Elizabeth Warren was her professor at Harvard. And when Elizabeth Warren was going to write a book and needed somebody to co-write the book with her, she picked the best candidate, the best person in her class, and that was Katie Porter. Hmm. And so they wrote a book together, and Katie is an expert on bankruptcies and an expert on the law. She's a law professor, the law around those issues that have to do with financial protection, which is right up Elizabeth Warren's alley. She was also endorsed by Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. who she worked for a time when Harris was the Attorney General of California. The other person, Dave Min, used to work for Chuck Schumer. And what did he do for Chuck Schumer? He enabled Chuck Schumer when Chuck Schumer was taking massive, massive bribes from Wall Street. This was the guy in Chuck Schumer's office who was involved with that. And he was also endorsed by the New Dems. So here you have a sneaky, conniving New Dem running against an outstanding progressive. And one of the lessons that you can learn from the California elections was that the Democratic voters hate it when someone goes negative, when one candidate goes negative against another Democrat. Everybody likes it when you go negative against your opponent. The Republicans love it when someone goes negative against a Democrat. The Democrats love it when someone goes negative against a Republican. But Democrats do not like it when one Democrat attack another. Mm. And in two very, very high-profile races, this is one in Orange County and then another one up in Santa Clarita, the more conservative Democrat went negative against the more liberal Democrat, and they both lost.
Wow.
And, you know, who's to say if it would have been different if they hadn't done the attacking? Mm-hmm. But I say it. I say that Democrats can't stand it when their candidates attack each other. So both the women in who got attacked are both named Katie. One is Katie Hill and the other is Katie Porter. They both won. And I would go so far as to say, the part of the reason why they won, I mean, they were better candidates for one thing, but part of the reason that they won was because their opponents went very, very viciously after them.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
There's
a
lesson to
be learned. I mean, the one in Santa Clarita, the candidate who attacked Katie Hill was this clownish guy, Brian Caforio, who literally attacked her as someone who spread bed bugs.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine? I mean, this guy sent out four postcards to every Democrat in the district, each one with a different attack against Katie. And one of them was that Katie, because she was ran a nonprofit that helped mostly veterans, but a lot of people to find homes. So homeless people were she was trying to find homes for homeless people. That's what her mm-hmm. organization did, and he claimed that she was putting people into homes with bed bugs.
Oh my God!
Can you imagine? And four postcards, each one with a different crazy attack against her. So she won.
Good.
And he had a much higher name recognition because he had been the candidate 2 years ago. And she was able to overcome that. She, like I said, she's a better candidate. And Katie Porter, same thing. This guy Dave Min, I was just talking about, mm-hmm. he went viciously negative against her right from the very beginning. And you know, people got sick of it. They didn't want to hear it anymore. And hopefully, we'll never hear from him again.
Great. You have one of my favorite lines talking about New Jersey. You wrote, New Jersey was the disaster last night that no one who follows New Jersey Democratic politics didn't ever think it would be. Why didn't the Democrats put up somebody, or why didn't somebody run against Bob Menendez?
Well, someone did run against Bob Menendez. And did much better than anyone thought that she would.
Not as, I mean, I guess a serious candidate, because they're talking about this woman who got 40% of the vote, had nothing, you know, no organization, no serious candidacy.
Right. So New Jersey is a machine boss state in a very big way. So everyone everyone who wants to have a serious career in politics is too scared to go up against the bosses in anything. So it's, you know, and the bosses were behind Menendez, and, you can't get past that. So anyone who goes up against their candidates, first of all, it's very, very hard to win. There are structural reasons for that. And second of all, they threaten them with all sorts of things, including end of political hopes and aspirations.
Wow. Well, Bob Menendez, I think, you know, that's a Senate seat that could be lost instead of, held on to. So we'll have to see about that.
That's exactly the case.
That's so sad.
They also put up the single worst candidate probably running for as a Democrat anywhere in the country, a state senator named Jeff Van Drew. Mm-hmm. Van Drew, I think we've talked about before, is, an NRA ally, anti-choice, anti-gay, you know, just a typical, right-wing Democrat. And here he's proven himself in the state legislature, and the Democrats were so happy to get him. They didn't just support him, they recruited him. He didn't want to run. They talked him into it.
Wow. Wow. Hey, on that note, we are out of time. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and the Blue America Pack. As always, thank you so much, Howie.
Thank you. I'll see you next week.
Okay, take care. Tomorrow, we'll wrap up the week with the one, the only, Digby. Thanks, as always, for listening. I'll talk to you then.